More or less in order here.
I'm sure we're both coming out of same sponsors.
Captain Moore, Dory.
The budget, as you know, will be here on Thursday, effectively. What I'd like to do is...
Is allowed, allowed.
Our homes are getting thinner all the time.
What I'd like to do is to make the same committee, subcommittee assignments as were made last year, unless there's some serious objection, and if there are, let me know, and maybe we can make some other arrangements. We should, barring some sort of computer foul up like we had last year, I'd like to shoot at 60 days, at getting the budget back to the committee and finished, and to the caucus within 60 days. That would be 60 days of actually getting the budget, and that'll be Thursday. They're the numbers I'm looking for. And I think we can do it. We did a pretty good, made a pretty good shot at it last year, and possibly we could have done it in 60 days if we hadn't, you know, had all that delay early in the session.
Steve, you know your bill?
Yeah.
What does that require of us?
Okay, that's the next thing I want to take on. Within 45 days, we are supposed to have a resolution through that essentially sets a ceiling on the budget and makes tentative allocations, which, you know, I think are nothing more than a good educated guess. I think mechanically what we'll do is simply, when we come to a conclusion on that, and I'd like to get that done within half that time, another 3 weeks or so, I would report it out in the form of a resolution with a committee report attached, so that we don't have to introduce it first with a, you know, an arbitrary number attached to it, which everybody will immediately shoot at. So let's get our numbers together. I still have to go over with Jay how we're gonna meet that. But I will regard that figure as being setting the budget limit in conflict. If we go above that, then we might as well wipe out the whole pack. It works for the Congress. There's no reason why it can't work for us. So. Anyway, that I'd like to see on the floor of the House within 3 weeks.
What's that?
That is the resolution which would set a budget ceiling before we finish our deliberations. And tentative allocations between categories, which are the allocations are not binding, but the figure is. What we'll do is, I think this first week is full of joint sessions and guys are trying to get their own personal bills together and we don't have the budget yet. Unless there's serious objections, I don't want to have any meetings until the governor sends his budget message down on Thursday. I'd like to have a short meeting after that, immediately after he gives his budget message on Thursday. But Friday will be when we'll go to work, essentially. So I'd like to ask people who are doing work on their personal bills and stuff, you know, keep at it. We're going to have an awful lot of stuff in this committee this time. And a lot of people are going to have to, you know, we may have find that what we've got is essentially a whole lot of one-man or one-woman subcommittees. And so there's going to be a lot of work generated from this committee. You know, your personal stuff, and I've got two or three myself. Let's try to get through with that this week, so we can go to work on that budget beginning Friday. First let me ask this, has anybody got any comments on the subcommittee assignments and that sort of thing? Is any problems with the way it was set up last year, Leah?
I don't have any problems. I just wondering if anybody wanted to switch. I know I had the smallest category of the budget last year, the only protection.
Well, you're on what else? You're also serving on.
Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
You're on some other budget category too, aren't you?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, what Ways and Means, have you got a Ways and Means subcommittee?
Yeah, sure do. Clark is the chairman. You're on.
Republican on?
No, Leo's on it. Leo's on it.
Okay. Just protecting our interests.
I was just gonna say, if anybody wanted to, you know, switch, I'd be willing to.
Okay.
Hope you're interested in health and social safety.
Okay, Rick?
Daddy chase.
I didn't think he'd go over that. Our committee meeting, so we don't have to conflict with some other, you know, last year we kinda set up a thing that was quite a conflict.
Well, now.
Arrangements.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for the subcommittee stuff. Well, you know, I gotta, you know, what we'll have to do the same kind of thing, put a calendar sort of deal up here for people to sign up for using this room. And I would assume that we can probably use that room over there in the court building also, once again. I don't know what, you know, whether the permanent fund gonna move in there or not. You've got, you know, the hell, if you've got, I think the times are the most critical things. Because, I mean, you can have a subcommittee meeting in, you know, in the analyst rooms, or in my room.
Okay.
Or something like that, or in your own offices for that matter. There's not usually two or three people there in the analyst, right?
Yeah, well, I can move mine anywhere as long as it doesn't have a conflict with Mr. Duncan.
Okay.
Steve, I assume there's no problem attending meetings of subcommittees that, like during the interim, I've gotten certain.
Time last year, you remember, you couldn't come early.
During the interim, I worked on corrections quite a bit, so I'm now interested in that. I suppose there's no problem working to just if I could attend the meetings on that or anything.
Oh, yeah, no problem with that. No. Matter of fact, which one of these things did you have last year?
I got health and social services, which.
Well, a lot of that budget's within health and social services.
Yeah, it's sort of weird because the commissioner of health and social services is over corrections, but the way the budget's broke out, it's split up in a number of different places.
Yeah, okay, all right. Okay, well, maybe we do something later there. Well, I would imagine a lot of your work's gonna have to do with the capital budget anyhow.
Most of it, but there's some, we have gotten a lot of things on staffing problems, and we spent a lot of effort on that too.
So I staffed of the institutions.
Yeah.
Okay. Then what you might wanna do, and maybe we could,
I think corrections now is under administration.
Leo wants to go someplace else, you know.
Well, I think it's Phillips.
Who was that?
Administration of Justice, I think, that has corrections, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
The court system?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well, I think we worked something out with that. All right. I wanna put the committee on notice that I intend to raise this matter about capital projects this year. I've been of the opinion for about 2 years that once petroleum revenues reach a certain point, which they will have, I think, in the next year or so, there's no reason to have bond issues for capital projects anymore. There's no reason to go into debt. There's no reason to go into direct funding of capital projects. Now, that's my personal opinion. Other people disagree, but we'll have to see what the governor comes out with. I don't know whether, you know, there was a lot of words down there of agreement with that last year, and then apparently they want to float more bond issues. So we'll have to see about that. So what I'm saying is I'm not purporting to speak for the committee. So it's just me. Okay. While we're in here, I'd like to take up two matters that were introduced this morning. one of which is Clark's resolution, HR 46, HR 46. The other is House Bill 580, which is a, okay. Let me pass.
Steve, apparently you're going into a bill session. I wonder if I can ask a question for you.
Yeah, sure. Please do.
I think there, first, the Finance Committee, often, I have already talked to the director of the staff of this organization about fund balances as of July 1, 77, and the re-encumbering period. I think that they've been working on that, if I understood it right. And also the revenue sources. I know that people have not attended it in the last couple of years like we have in the past. But I think it's more important than ever now that we're going to have a budget that's mm-hmm. just purely related to inflation, the way I figure the numbers out. Mm-hmm.
That's what I read.
But I think that we ought to have, if we don't want to meet jointly, I think we ought to have a pretty good idea what our revenue sources are going to be. Now, it's important that we get monthly indicators. We've got some substantial shortfalls in revenue. And it's pretty obvious for the reason for them. But is this budget going to be based on cash on hand, or is it going to mean that we're going to continue the reserve tax and things like that? And I think we ought to know all those things before we ever start.
Well, let me put it this way. I think we ought to have a detailed briefing of the revenue picture before we start on the budget. How do you feel pretty good about giving that briefing?
Overall, I think you may want, and probably we will be hearing from the Treasury again on the detailed tax.
Yeah, I think we should do that, and I guess we've done that every year anyhow. But yeah, especially this year. Now, my understanding of the deficit is it somewhere in the neighborhood of $52
million.
No, it's $52 million.
Oh, I thought you said $52
million. No. So, and I don't know,
is this the first year that we have to start reimbursing the reserves tax, or?
Theoretically, yeah.
I wonder if that'll be included in the budget figure. I guess we have to wait and see.
Well, it would be deducted from the revenue picture. It doesn't seem more accurate because it shows up in the tax credit, so it would be money that you didn't get.
I
want
to ask Milt a question on that. Milt, is the, matter of fact, the Commissioner of Revenue's revenue projections take into account the deduction of credit against severance tax,
right?
Based on that.
Right. So
and he spreads, how does he work that deduction, you know?
Well, it doesn't show up in the revenue.
I know it doesn't.
But estimate
at all. He's applying it over a 2-year period.
Well, it's actually going to work out probably to 3 or more, especially with the slowdown in oil throughput. It's up to half of their severance tax liability per year.
It's a maximum of half. Okay. Well, so he's figured a maximum each year.
Okay, Ernie?
As I understand it, the last fiscal year was the last year that we would apply the tax on reserves. Isn't that right? So it would mean that if the revenue projections, isn't it constitutionally required that you're supposed to have cash? Revenues on hand are to be equal or better than the amount of the budget. And constitutionally, we're not allowed to deficit spend. I understand that. Well, it's really important that we check that out. In the past 2 years, we haven't had much participation in the revenue report, but I've always felt that it was really important that we had that. And also that result of this report that I've been nagging and finally getting some surface on that, the annual monthly spending sheet plus the capitulation of the account after the fiscal year ends. And apparently you folks have done some work on that already, if I understood Jay right this morning, in the re-encumbering period. It'll all be in the form of some kind of report to this committee. In fact, what I'm getting to say is that, and I would suggest to you, Steve, that we have a committee of the whole, so we all get an idea of what we're dealing with. And I make myself clear, I'm not being malicious when I say that, but.
No, I think you're right.
Because under the subcommittee system, it's damn hard to, if we don't have that to start with, to get ourselves in a bind. And the same with what, continuing to what you related to, I agree that if we're gonna have budget surpluses like some reports the permanent fund committee has had, based on certain revenue projections, certainly, if they're firm and if the current revenue sources are as correct as they can be, without any problems in the future of throughput being less than predicted and all other things related to.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're always dealing with, you're always projecting yourself out the future someplace. Yeah. Yeah, I think every member should have a good idea about what's going on in the revenue picture. You always have, and you should know that if you're a member of the committee anyhow. You sort of presume you know it. And I know what we tend to have later on in the week. You know, if we can do that, a rundown of the revenue projections.
Yeah, one thing, Steve, that was confusing to me, the very first time I heard the commissioner say we're facing a deficit, was that it really isn't an absolute deficit, the kind that's prohibited by the Constitution, but it's a greater anticipated expenditures over income for that year. In other words, the 52 that Steve's referring to is actually less that amount of expenditure over what we anticipate bringing in. There is a surplus of, I don't know, $600 million or something that's from which that 52 would come from if we didn't raise any other additional revenue. But what it means is that we're starting to eat into accumulated surpluses and we're deficit spending in reality, even though it isn't maybe strictly forbidden by the Constitution.
Well, the reserve tax, of course, as far as I'm concerned, was an end run of the Constitution.
Well, and then the end run is a good play.
It doesn't work for the Oakland Raiders.
It worked for Washington State. Washington.
Leah?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Unless there's objection, what I'd like to do is take up House Joint Resolution 46, Mr. Greening, sponsor of this resolution. It went through this morning. And Clyde, would you like the presentation?
Yeah. Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to wait a little bit until I'm getting a memo from Greg Erickson. As a matter of fact, I think that memo was requested by you and Fred Brown, dealing with exactly what his feelings anyway, or the impact of this might be. At this point, without talking to the Commissioner of Revenue, I have no idea whether the $50 million or so that the Commissioner claims will be lost if this treaty goes through as presently written is a realistic figure or not. I can't say at this point. All I can say is that the two articles deal with two items of present tax law. Even if, regardless of what bills are pending now before the legislature, it would outlaw essentially the unitary business method of allocating or of figuring income. And it's definitely, at least in my view, a violation of the Constitution. And it would reduce flexibility in terms of our ability to deal with multinational corporations. Mm-hmm. And on that basis, I certainly favor it, but the problem I have at this point without looking at other information is determining what the actual impact might be. I just advise the committee to Greg Erickson's initial view is that it may not, if this goes through, may not actually result in a reduction of income based on Article 9, although Article 10, which limits, as you can read on the second page of this, limits the amount we can tax dividends on stocks held by a British corporation. In other words, you should be aware that this essentially deals with British Petroleum, and it also has stock in other companies, which will be earning money from oil produced on the North Slope. And the dividend paying on that stock owned by BP would be limited to a tax of 15% or less. And that particular article, we feel, may have more impact on our actual revenues than Article 9. That's about as much information as I have at this point.
Okay, well, you want to hold it then?
Yeah.
All right, I agree. The other thing is, I don't think any bill folders have been made up, but these things just sat here this morning, and there is a rush for this 580, and so I've asked Ron. Apparently, we have to have it passed by day after tomorrow, so that's anyway, special favor to the administration. Okay. Here's a. Ron, we passed out copies of House Bill 580 to the members. This morning, Bill crossed the Speaker's desk, and it was referred to two committees. The Health and Social Services Committee waived referral, so it's up here. And I wonder if you could give us a rundown on that. Milt has also looked into it during the interim, and he'll also have something to say on it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, probably the most critical item here is not the purpose for which we're wanting to appropriate these funds, which is for the Medicaid area, but rather the federal regulations and such that apply to these. What we're trying to appropriate is what's called at the federal level counter-cyclical funding, meaning that the federal government was appropriating funds to give the states to use so that when your economy was slowed down, you had a lot of unemployment or such, you didn't go ahead and cut back on your state expenditures. And one of the requirements under this federal law was that every state assure the federal government that it will spend, appropriate, or otherwise obligate these funds within 6 months of receipt. At the federal level, last spring, when the Alaska legislature was winding up, they were in the process of changing this law. Their change ended up with the state of Alaska getting far more money than was anticipated. In a nutshell, we've got $532,000, roughly, that we received from the federal government on July 12th, which was in excess of the total amount of countercyclical that we had appropriated for the current year. So in order to be making the best faith effort, and in fact, the federal people say we have to comply with this, we would have until January 12th to get this money appropriated or otherwise obligated. Another item in the federal law is that these funds must be handled in the same manner as regular state receipts are handled. Or you have to tell them some other legal mechanism that you would have to obligate. In other words, they'd say you have to appropriate them just like you would state general fund monies, which means through the entire legislature.
We agree with that.
So in a nutshell, that's what we're trying to do, is be able to comply with this federal law appropriating this $532,000 for Medicaid. Now, we have other supplemental needs for Medicaid, so this isn't going to take care of all of the supplemental for Medicaid. I think there's no doubt that they need at least this much money, and I think Milt would probably agree with that from looking at the Medicaid information we've sent him already.
Okay, just so it'll be clear, no general funds involved in this.
No, sir. These are in place of what would be have to be appropriated as general fund money if we couldn't use this.
Right. Okay. Are there questions of Mr. Lynn, Mr. Meekins?
Yeah, I guess we're up to this, maybe, I don't know. We're talking about, the Medicaid budget is done by sort of guessing, isn't it? I mean, we appropriate each year, but we don't really know what the demand is gonna be for the funds there, right?
That's right. We're up, once the state says, yes, we're gonna pick up this option, we're gonna provide medical services of this nature under this federal program. Federal government pays 50% of the cost, and we pay 50%. We just have to pay for whoever's eligible, however much the amounts are.
So what you're saying is that at the same time that we sort of guess low, which we sort of have a policy, I guess, of guessing low in a sense, rather than appropriating too much. And at the same time, the law changed so that more money's available for the federal social health.
There's two separate items. The Medicaid budget under the federal program is funded by 50% federal Medicaid dollars, if you will, and 50% of state discretionary dollars. Mm-hmm. And the federal government, completely unrelated to that, has another program called countercyclical.
Which they give us federal money.
And say you can just consider it just like it's state money, do anything you want with it.
And this is what you're suggesting?
And this is what the legislature did with the first amount. The amount we already had received and estimated.
But technically, we could do anything with this money.
Yes, well, just about anything, yes.
So, even though it isn't general fund money, I mean, we could, I mean, this bill could be changed by I'm not advocating, but we could add something else in here and say,
Yes. There are very few limitations on this.
Okay, give an Brayman? Example of anything.
I'm sorry. Ron, if I understood you correctly now, the $532,298 is over and above money that you had expected to receive. Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
And did I understand you also to say also that in addition to using this money, you were going to have another supplemental request for general fund?
Yes, sir, for Medicaid.
The idea is to break them into two parts for us so that hopefully we wouldn't have to have a discussion if this was the exact amount of money that was needed for Medicaid at this time. If we can just say, here's roughly $1 million worth, and we think the total need is, say, 2.5 million, but we can argue about that difference or discuss that difference with the next supplemental appropriation bill.
And also, American. I understand you say also that in the past that we have took a guess, obviously, probably on the conservative side as to how much the Medicaid costs are going to be and then made up for the difference with the supplemental. Is that what you're saying?
I think that Representative Meekins said that, but I think that's probably fair.
Generally, how much, what kind of an average have we had for supplementals for Medicaid in the past? What I'm getting at is it reasonable to expect that you would be off in your estimates on the cost of Medicaid more than $500,000?
Yeah, I think we've typically been off by more than $500,000. But is it appropriate?
That's probably not a fair question. But is it reasonable to be consistently underestimating the cost of Medicaid to that extent? I'm trying to figure out why we're. Why we come in with an extra $500,000 and we're still going to have to dig some more out, and if this is, never mind.
Yeah, give me a definition of anything.
Well, I think I don't have the regulations here, but it might be easier to go back and decide what we couldn't use it for. I think one advantage to use it for Medicaid is that supposing we try to appropriate it this way and it ends up it's January 15th when it's appropriated and the federal government comes along and says, absolutely not, we're not going to let you have those monies. We haven't then set up a program and an expectation that we wouldn't have to do otherwise. If we can't use the countercyclical funds here, we're going to have to appropriate state money. That was just to continue an ongoing program.
Can you go beyond regulation for expenditures in Medicaid?
No, you're obligated under certain levels. In other words, do you have some discretionary thing that the department can opt to add on? They're not supposed to be able to do that. It's supposed to just be, federal guideline says here are the items that are eligible for Medicaid.
But they could write a regulation over there and spend anywhere they wanted to.
No, sir, there's certain items, under the federal law, the legislature says we're going to adopt the mental health option. I'm not familiar with the terminology, but anyway, we adopt it. By resolution, they say we're going to adopt this option that's available at the federal level for like mental health care under Medicaid. That means that we just take all these federal requirements and federal rights, and that's just the program that you run. The department couldn't opt to expand into an entirely new field.
Ms. Buckton.
Question. Ron, during the interim, I ran into some problems. Well, some people, constituents in Anchorage, had asked me to look into the homemaker services program and the contracting that went on apparently here in Juneau. Could you explain to me what this Medicaid nursing home services is all about? Is that much different from the homemaker services that that we ran into problems with during the interim?
Yeah. These are actually, it's not home nursing. These are nursing homes, in effect, such as St. Anne's Nursing Home up here, where the people are in a physical structure that's operated and has a rate structure. It's not somebody coming into a home, which is what the homemaker would be. Have, if you will, somebody coming into a home doing so many hours of service. This is when you, in effect, have somebody like a patient in the equivalent of, instead of a hospital, a skilled nursing home, which is in a nursing care center.
The funds here will not be going to that kind of program.
No way connected to the homemaker program, which I understand there's some problems about whether it should have been contracted with the current vendor or the previous vendor.
Okay,
thank you.
Ron, have we already incurred the money that's going to be asked for one way or another as a supplemental of Medicaid? Have we already, is that a sort of a debt of the state, or, I mean, if people come in and, or how's that, what's the situation? They've applied for the funding or something, or has the state already spent the money or not?
We've been spent, at the rate we're spending, we couldn't keep paying obligations through the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, and I wonder if Milt could explain how we determine Medicaid funding.
Basically, we take the prior year's expenditure and allow so much for inflation and possibly a caseload increase.
Try to anticipate like a pipeline or something. And we have been over by more than half a million. At least we were last year, weren't we? I believe
last year was more than that.
Yeah.
Milt, do you have any observations on this bill? I need to take a look at it.
Well, I just might say I do know that the caseload for AFDC has shot up quite a bit recently, and that probably has something to do with the need for Medicaid supplemental.
Okay, are there further questions to either Milt, Jay?
Chairman, there's one thing I did want to bring to the committee's attention. Two things. One is that I wanted just for the record to make the committee aware of this. It's our position that this could have been handled by RP any time from July through the present before budget and audit. The reason this was not, of course, is related to the fact that we're in a dispute with the executive over what kinds of things can, if anything, go before budget and audit. But the committee should be aware of that. Secondly, presuming that the merits of the case will be sustained. There is a bill, a Senate bill, 337 in House Rules, that is a defunct appropriation, and should you wish to speed the thing on its way, the quickest way to do it would be to use that House Rules Committee substitute for Senate Bill 337. It was a $400,000 appropriation for a land clearing in the Delta area, which I believe was taken care of elsewhere. That was good.
I believe it was.
Yes.
Well, in
Mr. Chairman, when you're...
I have a question before we quit here, DeMille.
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, when you're ready, I entertain a motion, I would make a motion, but I would...
Okay, Mr. Swartz.
Mel, under the rules, if you're acquainted with them, under Medicaid, is there a stipulation on how much travel could go into and be charged against Medicaid?
No, there's no limitation.
It's open.
It's not very much, though. Most of it's patient hospital, nursing home type.
Do we have a, do you know in the regulations if there's a stipulation on the amount that can be spent for travel?
No, I don't know exactly what restriction there might be.
That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee report out House Bill 580.
The objection?
Just a discussion. Could we have the same effect? I think there's a reason for maybe sending it out as a... maybe is recommending that this... Let me ask Jay a question. Is there a reason other than to speed it up that we might want to do it to another vehicle?
That's the only reason. Because of the deadline and whatever.
12 is the deadline.
Well, yeah, okay.
Well, let's stay after tomorrow. Well, we can get it for tomorrow. There's objection to the motion. There's no objection. Motion carries. How many bid passes do we have? Okay. Members, okay, while the bill report's going around, it is 7 minutes to two, and we have a joint session. Are there other matters that must be...
Just on Clark's question, are we going to, I mean, I think it's right that we have to take a vote on this, but what about using that other bill? I mean, do we think it's a good idea?
Well, we may want to use that bill for something else.
I never thought of that.
Ron, is it really making that much difference if we can get it on the floor tomorrow and get it over to the Senate?
Mr. Chairman, another vehicle we could use, pick up a few days if you need it, and it could be done on the Senate side, is we could make it retroactive to a certain date.
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of ways it can be handled.
I'm not familiar enough with the rules of the legislature as to how many days have to elapse between introduction, reading, and passage and things like that.
Depends on who asking for the bill.
Okay.
But if we pass the other,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman, well, just to continue that discussion, if we pass out today and it's voted on the House tomorrow, goes to the Senate tomorrow, I guess they could consider incentivizing tomorrow and then pass the next day.
I must say that I was told by people that claim to know about such things that you could backdate it to January 12th and it had the same effect. Is that correct?
Put a retroactive clause in.
Clause in.
Clause on the bottom.
That's what, here.
That is what. That is what I was told by the country's legislative. If something happens, we can use another vehicle and probably get it done today. Okay. If there's nothing further to be taken up, I will adjourn and I will announce a further meeting probably Thursday afternoon.
I'm just trying to clean up the sheets for you there, you got to do this.
Well, I might still take off.
Okay. Meeting will come to order. The purpose of the meeting, before we start, what I'd like to do is just give you a general, some kind of general notion of what we expect next week. I've talked to Jay Hogan. Jay will be able to give us an overall rundown on the budget, hitting the high points and stuff on Monday. The short forms will begin, will start coming out of the printing press on Monday, one after the other, Monday or Tuesday. As the short forms come out, I would ask the budget analysts to make the general presentation to us, hitting the highlights and pointing out the things that should be pointed out, as we've done every year. I would think that we'll be through with that by the latter part of next week. At that time, the subcommittees, and incidentally, at this time, I would appoint the same subcommittees as existed last year, with the exception of the Subcommittee on Natural Resources, where Representative Specking was participated from, of course, he's not on the committee, and I would appoint Representative Lovesef to serve in his place. Otherwise, the same committee, subcommittee assignments would apply. I think what I'm trying to do is hold bill sessions maybe on Wednesdays or something, when we have to do that, and have it in the middle of the week so we can split things up, unless there's something that gets in the way there. And try to hold bill sessions. Of course, none of this will, you know, we'll all have to make exceptions here and there. Try to hold bill sessions maybe just once a week, and we'll try to do that at 1:15 in the afternoon and keep going until we've gotten all the stuff that we have to get out. And I'll try to keep the bills dammed up until we get through with our subcommittee work wherever it's possible. If, of course, if the members have bills, you know, that's something else. Okay, today I've asked Milt Barker to give us a view of the revenue picture. Later on, I'm sure that the Department of Revenue would like to come in and give one too. Perhaps it'll be more useful for them to do that after we've heard from Milt, so people can ask some questions. So, unless there are questions by the committee, Milt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first thing, I passed out quite a few memos here. I'll just kind of go through them and tell you roughly what they're about, and if you have particular questions, I'd be glad to try and explain them a little better. The first thing I passed out there was two pages from the Governor's Executive Budget Act that I think just became available, and it shows you how much money we have in the bank, what we expect to receive and spend for both FY77 and FY78. And you can see that we're starting out with $668 million in the bank at last June 30th. And even though we have a budget deficit of around $85 million for FY78 here, and a bit of a surplus next year, we'll still wind up with close to $600 million in the bank at the end of FY79, if the governor's budget appropriation is passed by the legislature. The second page shows you the cash available to operate. The first page was the balance available for appropriation. And so on the second page, you find deducted from the balance an amount equivalent to the investments that are not readily saleable. In other words, veterans loans, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Ross.
No,
Milt, the difference is between the first and second pages, or the eighth and ninth pages, whatever they are, is taking out the sort of fixed investments or non-liquid investments.
Right.
In between the cash available and the total amount.
You see the third from last item on page 9 is, they say cash available for new appropriations. That's not exactly right. The cash, they start out with the beginning balance of 668. Well, that's the balance available for appropriation. The cash balance is actually about $30 million higher. So their cash balance available for operating is actually, instead of 257, about 287.
Well, what's the difference between cash balance and balance?
Well, there's although a given amount of money has been appropriated for, say, FY78, all of that won't be spent by the end of the year, and there'll still be cash sitting in the treasury eventually that would be paid out in accounts payable, but at that point in time you still have a kind of a cash flow to operate on.
There's no vouchers drawn out, or bills aren't in, or what?
There would be an encumbrance possibly, but the cash is still there because there
hasn't been drawn.
Right, hasn't been drawn.
Is what you're saying, Mel, is that the 8443 on the second page is these are estimate. In other words, until all the vouchers are in, we don't know what that figure is. And you're saying it's $30 million, probably less than that?
Right. At any given point in time, there's going to be, at the end of the year anyway, there's going to be $30 million cash. More cash, and $30 million less than the appropriate amount.
Well, how much of that is carried forward with it that's going to have to be billed in the next year? Since it's been encumbered, it can be paid out, can it, from revenues coming in the next year?
It can be. In the final stage, there will be some lapse, so that it may not all be paid out, but part of it will be.
But you're mostly talking about float.
Right.
Yeah, and then right under that said investment not readily saleable. How's that different from the 210? What investment are you talking about?
Well, they start out with the Veterans Loan Alaska Housing Finance Corporation notes that the state has bought, tourism loans, fishing loans, that sort of thing. They have $210,000 of those loans and mortgages on the books June 30th, '77, and then that increases. They estimate it will increase $60 million during FY78.
Okay, so the figure would exactly 270 then of unsaleable investments. It rises into the
okay. Right. And then there's another $69 million in FY79 they'll pick up the estimate.
Mr. Freeman, explain to me on the second page the general fund increase, $145 million. What does that mean?
Well, it should be, it's a deficit. It's a decrease, really. That's poor wording there, I suppose.
Well, it's in front.
I need to get it.
Should read change in the general fund.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. All right. Well, general fund increase or decrease, whatever it is that the...
Should be decrease.
Made up of an actual budget deficit of 85.2 plus the increase in illiquid investments of 60 million. Well, you can see the 85.2 on page 8 where it looks just at the deficit.
Okay, all right. the total of the two.
Your question, what, 145?
Yeah, why do we have the 145 figure there?
I think you had the 844 and 60 together and subtract 759 from it, don't you?
Subtract, yeah, that's right. That's the negative amount you get if you subtract 844 plus 160 from 759.
Your negative figure, 145.
60,085.2. I'm not sure whether that 85.2 is that.
That doesn't say any, other side. You do the same thing on the other side. Subtract your appropriations from your receipts, you get 85.2.
Oh, it's a negative surplus.
That's right, a negative surplus, that's right. We don't say that for negative fees.
So that was the election.
Negative surplus.
Okay.
Oh, I don't.
Is this, are these our figures 85.2? Because 52 is what I kept getting from the fellers across.
Right, the 52 that was quoted didn't, that was, I think that was an earlier estimate.
Okay. Are they claiming, is that going to be their figure too?
That.
85.
The work that was done by Legislative Affairs also, it's right at 90 million deficit. Mm-hmm.
How about this cash balance available for new appropriations, 55.3 within the current?
Well, no, that should be the 257.7.
This figure is incorrect?
No, the 55.3 is the difference on the FY79 revenue and appropriations and investments not readily saleable. Oh. They carry that figure over to the right.
All right.
Mr. Green.
Yeah, is the reason they don't include the investments not readily saleable, is it the implication that someday they could be sold? I mean, because if they never can be sold, it should be added to this deficit thing. I mean, and the implication is, since they got 60 more added to the loan programs, they're adding that to the less each year, so this figure's going to get larger and larger. At some point, it's got to be figured as either a deficit, I know in the absolute terms, but in terms of cash available to operate the government, it's a deficit amount.
It's
in the permanent fund, so to speak. And they don't figure the permanent fund as being part of the deficit, but yet if it, you can't liquidate it.
Mr. Greening, you could sell them if you want to take a little meeting.
Yeah, I realize that.
That's 75 cents on the dollar, and I imagine that's the reason they have to carry them.
Yeah, most of them being low interest loans, it'd be tough to get somebody to pick them up unless it's 80%, 75%, 70%.
All right. 20%. Are there any other questions on this, on the general fund projections? Okay, people understand what this deal is now? Huh? All right.
So you saw from that first page there that we have a deficit this year of around $85 million. And originally revenues had been estimated to be roughly equal to the budget figure that the governor would sign. The reason we have this shortfall in revenue, which is also roughly the same as the deficit, is outlined in a couple memos that follow in your stack there, a November 4th and November 9th memo from Richard Haggard. And basically the deficit is due to less petroleum revenue than we anticipated. Income taxes are up, non-petroleum taxes in general are up, but petroleum taxes are down, and petroleum royalty also. And Mr. Haggard discusses the reasons for that. Basically, we've
fared less well all along the line than we anticipated. The price in LA or on the Gulf Coast is not as good as we thought we'd get. There are higher charges for tankers than we anticipated. The pipeline tariff, of course, with the Supreme Court allowing the companies to set their interim tariffs where they want, we are facing a $6.20 pipeline tariff, which was higher than anticipated. And finally, the companies are asking for roughly 60 cents for the cost of separating the oil and gas, dehydrating the oil and gas and so forth on the lease on the North Slope. And this has to come out of our royalty. It doesn't affect the severance tax, which is the law does not allow those types of costs to be deducted. So basically, all along the line, the oil picture is not what people anticipate. If you want to,
what was the total in lost oil revenue from our prediction to, our company?
It was roughly $200 million.
So we would have been 115 in the...
The general fund wouldn't have been 115 to the good, because part of that would have gone to the permit fund and native claims on the royalty share, but it would have been a lot better.
Mr. Howe, you're also saying, too, that the throughput was not the same as the projection.
That's right. That's very important.
I just say that because of some of the things I've said in the past. Who the hell controls it? Not us.
When is the revised estimate going to come out?
Well, these memos contain really the best estimate that anybody has done to date on what we're going to have for FY79 in the way of petroleum revenue.
These are the revised estimates. I'm asking because I see a sentence in the November 4 letter that the Department of Revenue is currently in the process of developing a revised estimate.
Right. Then he discusses in the November 9th revenue. November 9th memo there that yes, they did revise their non-petroleum revenues upward from $263 million to $329 million, an increase of $66 million for non-petroleum revenue. And so he amends his forecast on that basis. November 9th there, it's the second point, number one, page one.
Incidentally, we all may have answered this as people quickly back and forth up here, but is there any mechanism either that we have or that state has, the administration has, to investigate these tanker charges and see if they're justified, or are we required to take whatever they lay on right now?
Well, as far as the severance tax go, the commissioner of revenue is empowered to limit the charges to what he judges fair and reasonable, I believe, some such language. They haven't produced any estimates of what they would judge to be reasonable as yet, but they will probably be doing that.
Okay. In the meantime, the tanker charges are apparently 4 to 5 times what the original estimate was, what ordinary people. At least some of them, anyway. Is that more or less, do you know what the tanker charges are and were?
Well, on this LA and Seattle run, they're running around $1.10 or so, and we had the highest estimates have been 80 cents, and some estimates have been around 60 cents, I believe. the run all the way to the Panama Canal is costing around $3.50, which is quite a bit higher than anybody anticipated.
Are the companies doing this in their own tankers?
I don't know, different companies. I know some companies have used chartered boats here at the outset. I think there are some company-owned tankers operating now, but I am not for sure about that. Okay, if you want to know more about the issues that are involved in the pipeline tariff debate, there's a memorandum of November 15th from myself. It basically copies of a protest filed by the ICC's own staff, and they state what they find to be wrong or deficient with the oil company's rates. So you may want to look at that. Following that, you have a memo from Richard Haggard, November 17th. These offer some long-range revenue projections to the year 1985. And he has three different sets of assumptions he uses. In the worst case, I believe, rate of growth in the state budget is 15%. The tariff rate on the pipeline is at the company level, 625. And those are the two more important estimates. In this middle estimate, he uses a 10% rate of growth in the budget. And he splits the difference on the pipeline tariff between the ICC proposal and the company proposal. And in his best case, he uses a 7.5% rate of growth in the budget and uses the ICC proposed rate of 490 for the tariff. Following that, you have some super long range projections. In the year 2005, this is a December 5th memo for myself, and these were done on the assumption of a constant real per capita spending for state government budgets, and so this is roughly the 7% rate of growth in the state budget that Mr. Haggard had in his best case. And again, these scenarios use the ICC tariff rate of 490, so these all look pretty good. Really, the most important factor here is the rate of growth in the state budget. If that is increased to around 12%, those huge surpluses you find developing disappear by 1992. And you have one more memo, again from myself, November 25th. It traces out what the actual growth has been in the budget for the since 1960. Considers both before Prudhoe Bay was discovered and after there have been different rates of growth. And that's all I have for you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Milt, for the questions, and Milt. Russ.
Milt, I understand the farther you project out, of course, with all the number of assumptions you've got, the less reliability you have. Do you have any kind of, is there any statistical work done in terms of what they call the confidence in the projection would be at all? Do we know how, can we do that? Or?
We could do it. The confidence with which you can estimate that is, again, an estimate by the person that assigns the probabilities to the various scenarios that he wants to lay out. So there's no way to know, really. You can't really predict.
It's hard to have a lot of faith in the projections one way or another because there are so many variables, and because our experience in last year was that just, you know, right down the line, everything we thought was our best guess was incorrect one way or another, and most cases was we were too high, and the real case was lower, and things like the pump station 8 blowing up. I mean, if we had something that actually stopped the pipeline for 5 or 6 months, we'd probably, I mean, things, unexpected things like that could really make a difference, I guess. Do you have any, what do you think about this? Do you think if you don't have any confidence, is it that they're too high or that they're too low? Do you think we'll do better than this? Or?
Well, I would really comment that the purpose of these long-range estimates is not necessarily to predict what's going to happen, but to see what would happen if you do this as opposed to doing something else. In other words, what things are important if you want to have a high general fund balance in the future. And it quite readily comes out of the analysis that the important things are the rate of growth in the state budget and some of the oil revenue factors that are involved.
Mr. Chair,
will
you
go
ahead on that, Brad?
I can ask later, didn't I?
No, go ahead.
Well, just on this, on your memo on what is important in the budget, what was the, I see the information in regards to the average. The average is computed differently. Well, I guess this is last memo here. And I guess you're saying that between 70 and 77, if you normalize it, I don't really know what that means, it's almost a 19% increase per year in money terms.
Right. Well, that's in money.
First, what do you mean by normalized? Put that way.
Well, that was just to indicate that there was a doubling of the budget in 1969 after the Prudhoe Bay discovery was made and we received the bonus money. So when you have a big jump like that, it makes the rate look very high. If you spread that increase out over a few years, which might make sense if you want to argue that we aren't going to experience that kind of doubling of the budget again in the future, but on the other hand, we may continue to experience strong growth in the budget because we do have available funds. I spread that increase out, that doubling, over a few years to still count those increases, but to allow the implementation of that additional spending over a more normal time period. And it lowers the rate somewhat, but as you can see, it's still a fairly high rate of growth.
Okay, now the normalizing relates to the first 1970 to 77 figures or the second?
That's the second.
The second was higher than that. I mean, shouldn't it decrease the rate?
What you should look at is the 1969 to 77, and it,
oh, I see.
It's
I see.
Higher than that.
I see.
If you start after the budget's already been doubled, then the rate of growth in real terms has only been 2.79%. However, that if you start before, it's 11.15, and so you know you have a wide difference there in the rate of growth depending on whether or not you count that doubling of the budget in that 1 year. Well, it doesn't make sense either to not count it or probably to count the full increase of doubling in a year, because that's probably won't happen again. But if you average it in, it comes out to a 7% increase.
Now, between 60 and 77, you don't have to normalize because it's sort of averaged, it averages itself in, right? Because you're not starting with that, it's not in the first place.
Right, there were no extraordinary events like that happened in that period.
Well,
right.
It was there, but
yeah, it was.
You don't have to average it because it averages.
Right, it is averaged in that period.
And so, what was the lowest increase in money, not in constant dollars, just in terms of for any one year? You know, you remember? I didn't find it in your table. I think I remember reading in the ICR study that it was 8%. I'm trying to get a feel on what's realistic in terms of.
Well, there were a couple years when the budget actually decreased in terms of current dollars. 1964 for one, and 1971, right after the budget was doubled.
It was actually a decrease in terms of the actual dollars appropriated.
When you're talking about a 15% increase per year, that when they use those in the projection, they're talking about not the per capita constant dollar type, but just the actual money
right.
increase.
The actual money count, inflation, and everything.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, if I remember correctly, the 15% were the ones that come up with some large deficits in 10 or 15 years, is that correct?
That's correct.
And even getting to 15% in terms of money, not in terms of actual, would be higher than, would require us to go down from what the average it has been for the last 17 years anyway, from 19.29 to 15, so.
Correct.
Even with reductions in the rate of increase, if we just went down to 15, we'd still end up, according to these projections, for the deficit in the future. Thank you.
Great. Now, I just had an observation, maybe you have a comment on the governor and his executive budget booklet here. Breaks revenues down into recurring revenues and non-recurring. And I suppose he classifies all oil taxes as non-recurring, I suppose, but in a sense, all revenues are non-recurring, and can, I mean, I don't understand the classification. You understand it? What that really means? For instance, if Prudhoe Bay collapsed tomorrow, not a dime of oil or a drop of oil came out of it, all the income tax structure, so-called recurring revenues, would change too. Do you understand the break there? What he's saying there? I don't understand you can actually take half the budget and say it's recurring or non-recurring unless you know what oil is going to be found. And
I think that's correct. In reality, there's a strong linkage there between the petroleum and our economy.
I'll ask Sterling that.
All right. Are there further questions from Milt?
One question. This mill on this page 8 of this insert. That available balance, that includes saleable assets? So like we're talking about loans and stuff.
Yes, it does.
It includes them. Let me ask a question. What are the considerable, let's say, cash balance, or I interpret this to be when they're really their assets? Is that just a
well,
way they want to set it up?
On page 8, you find a balance available for appropriation. And that, in other words, that's the...
Is that actually cash?
No, that's not all in cash. Part of it is in the liquid assets.
Yeah.
But that is the total of our assets over our obligations or to this point in time. Not all those assets are readily liquidable.
It's a form of accounting. Of the
300 million.
On the same page 8 that the U.S. citing, there is a surplus here of 85.2 million. But actually, you said it was deficit.
Right. Again, they should indicate deficit or surplus. It is a deficit. The parentheses denote the deficit or a negative number there.
But the one, the 13.7 million, is really a surplus.
That is a surplus, a real surplus, positive surplus.
We don't say deficit here. Are there further questions? All right, if not, I'd like to thank you, Milt, for making this presentation. I'd like to suggest to the members of the committee that you, instead of just letting this material sink to the bottom of the, you know, the flood of paper that's going to come in here pretty quickly, that you file it away, because I think they're going to be very useful documents during the session. I refer to you can find the file and stick it someplace where you refer to it, may be fairly helpful. Okay, on Monday, as I say, hopefully some of the short forms are going to be printed. Jay will give us a rundown of the budget, initial presentation, so you can be ready for that. In the meantime, what I'd like for the members to do is to cast about and see if you can find out what large, extensive public hearings we're going to have this session, because I don't want to get into a situation where we're getting toward the end of the session, we haven't heard had hearings on certain legislation, and we have to cram it all in at the end, and people don't get adequate notice. We have to be here. So if you have a bill, or if you know of a bill, and I recognize the fact that you just can't figure all, you know, all of that at the present time, but if you know of a bill that's going to require over, say, a day of hearings, then try to let me know as soon as you can so that we can schedule them in some sort of orderly fashion and let all the interested parties who want to testify on legislation know, let them have a couple of weeks' notice so that, you know, get some ordered process. In the meantime, once again, this year we're going to have to sign up for this space, and I'd like the subcommittees to operate with that. We'll have a calendar or something stuck up there so that the subcommittee meetings won't conflict with each other, so people, everybody will know when they meet and so forth. The subcommittee chairman has got to take care of that. But there will be a sign-up sheet. This room, of course, will be available, it's my understanding that room 647 over the courtroom will also be necessary. Jim?
Steve, do you have an idea of setting aside a certain time period in each day or certain days of the week for full finance committee meetings?
Yes. Yes. My original intention, anyhow, I can't work that way, would be to schedule bills and to take up regular business in the Finance Committee on Wednesdays at 1:15. If we've got more bills than we can handle in that 4-hour period or so, then we'll have to start doing it in the morning and run off all the way through the day. But for the present, at least, we'll have bill days on Wednesdays at 1:15.
What's this 45-day time though?
Okay. Wind this up in 45 days. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Jay is going to take up the 45-day resolution on Monday, along with an overview of the budget. But what I'd like to do is get those limits set by resolution and get it on the floor within 3 weeks or so. I think we're going to do that. But and like I say, this is the first year of this, and I think what we do this year with that statute is going to set the tone for how it's treated in future years. So I'd like for that resolution to serve as a ceiling on the budget. We can't that we can't go over in pre-conference committee or elsewhere. And we'll see if it works. If it doesn't work, well, we'll throw it out and try something else.
See, would there be a pre-conference on that resolution if, when it moves over to the Senate? So it'd be useful to have one before the pre-conference on the budget.
Oh, yeah.
Could be binding, I'd say, on that.
Well, that's why the 45 day, everybody knows when I'm going to get a budget for 45 days. Yeah.
Steve, it seems to me that we ought to, when we're going to take that up, that budget, that ceiling for this year, we ought to also talk about, you know, some of the things that Milt's brought up. If it's true that the major factor in whether we go into deficit in 15 years or 10 years is the, excuse me, the rate increase in the budget, then I think we ought to talk about that and decide what we want to do. We can keep putting that off for years and years, but if, for instance, and I don't know that it is particularly, I'm not trying to be inflammatory, but if it would be, we should only increase 12% per year or 10% per year, it looks like right now, maybe we ought to try to keep our increase this year at that rate. Something like that, you know, in a long kind of projection, because the long projections don't look so good. We got to plan that way.
Well, the important thing to remember, I think, is that if this resolution does what it's supposed to do, that we won't be just talking about, you know, by golly, the budget will not increase over 10% from last year. We'll be setting that limit. There won't be all this flurry of announcements about how little money we're going to spend at the end of the year, you know, we've done it again. It won't happen that way. So it's something we're going to have to take some care with to make sure that we're not putting strictures on ourselves that we can't honor. So, I think we're going to have to be very careful. If there's nothing further, unless somebody's got some reason to have a meeting tomorrow, I wasn't planning on having one. Does anybody want to have one just for fun of it? All right. If not, we'll meet again on Monday at 1:15.
Okay. What about John?